The money was all important to Kniff. And here, perhaps, he made a fatal error. This dentist from Newark, who had worked his whole life only in dentistry, now tried to play it tough with the big boys of big business. "I am going to get this one way or the other," he said threateningly. "Do you want me as a friend, or do you want me as an enemy? If I can't come to an agreement with you people, I am going to sue these people, the girls. Then they will have to sue you to get the money. Fair warning. When I fight ferocious as a lion. I am a very valuable man to be with you." That had gone well, he must have thought. He must have smiled with his next line, confident that he had them on a hook. "I am going to be as reasonable with you as I can. I am not here to gouge you or bleed you or anything else." The executives summed up the position. "Unless we pay you $10,000, you are in a position to make a lot of trouble for us. If we do pay it, you will help us." "I can help you, yes," said the dentist eagerly. Another director spoke up. "The future by itself, i.e. Kniff getting paid for treating the girls in future and holding them at bay for filing suit, is not sufficient. You must get the $10,000. "As I tell you," said Kniff cockily, "I must have my compensation." He had blown it. He may not have known, either, that the corporation already had Dr. Flynn in place, doing such fine work for them. Rhoda stood up swiftly, ready to dismiss him. "Your proposition is immoral," he declared. "We will have nothing whatever to do with it." "Immoral, is it?" echoed Kniff. "Is that final?" It seemed it was. When evidence of his proposition came out down the line, USRC would take the moral high ground for the fact that they had sent the dentist packing. The meeting had lasted for 55 minutes exactly. Chapter 23. Ottawa, Illinois, 1926. The bells of St. Columba pealed out joyously across Ottawa. A wedding seemed to happen every other week these days as the dial painters got married. Many were bridesmaids for each other. Francis Glachinsky married John O'Connell, a labourer. Mary Duffy wed a carpenter called Francis Robinson. Marie Becker got engaged to Patrick Rossiter. Mary Vicini courted Joseph Tonielli. And Peg Looney and Chuck Hackensmith eventually made plans to marry in June 1930. Charlotte Nevins, who hadn't worked for Radium Dial since 1923, was also one of those falling head over heels. She was still in touch with lots of the girls and told them excitedly of the charms of Albert Purcell. They'd met at the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago, dancing. Charlotte knew exactly how to swivel as she showed off her Charleston, and in so doing she caught the eye of Al, a labourer from Canada. They were best friends, revealed a close relative. Within 2 short years, Charlotte Nevins became the latest bride walking down the aisle of St. Columba. The church where many of these weddings took place was a white stone building with a grey slate roof and a beautiful altar that was the envy of the region. It was imitation marble and filled the whole space. St. Columba was fairly narrow, but its arched ceiling was so much higher than the building was wide that the effect was breathtaking. One of its few parishioners not caught up in this maelstrom of marriage was Catherine Wolfe. A young man at church had caught her eye, however. His name was Thomas Donoghue. He was 31 to Catherine's 23. Tom was a diminutive man with bushy eyebrows and a thatch of dark hair. He had a moustache and wireframe glasses. He did a variety of jobs, including engineer and painter, a rather apt parallel to Catherine, as the dial painters were listed as artists in the town directory, in a nod to the glamour of their work.